Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show for Saturday, March 2nd, 2013. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic today is Sequester Wall Street, Restore Glass-Steagall. And I want to just, before I introduce our two guests, we have a very transatlantic call, someone from Europe and from the high plains of North America. Before that, I want to say the banner that we had in front of the major house office building where Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve Chairman, was speaking this week, said, Sequester Wall Street, Restore Glass-Steagall. Everyone, I mean everyone, saw it. Hundreds of people, Obama's entourage convoy drove by. And this is beyond buzz. This is a certain moment of showdown right now on what's implied in that. It's not merely a slogan that we have to end the Wall Street London system that's crashing anyway. And the way to do that is to restore Glass-Steagall and those things that go along with it. So I will start here in North America. I'm so glad that we have with us our LaRouche Political Action Committee activist, Ron Wieczorek from South Dakota. Welcome, Ron.
Well, thank you, Marcia. I appreciate to be on here.
And we're so glad to have with us from Italy, speaking to us from Milan, we have Liliana Guarini, who's the chairwoman of the LaRouche movement there. You can say it in Italian for us, and welcome, Liliana.
Thank you, Marcia. It's Movimento Solidarietà.
And we shorten it sometimes to Movi Sol.
That's right.
And we are glad these two guests are available because they have a lot of very hot strategic action has taken place in Italy, for Europe and for the world, and in South Dakota. And I'll just say a very few things. We're going to begin with South Dakota, and Ron will fill us in a minute. But I mentioned that this is a moment of showdown because we have a breakdown crisis in the economy that's unfolding. People listening here can know it in many respects of literal physical existence, whether it's water, whether it's housing, whether it's jobs that there aren't any. We have a breakdown. But in terms of the financial system, so-called, that is the monetary system, we have a situation where it's so far gone that even you have commentary such as came out from that rotten financial media Bloomberg News Service that hired an accountant firm to give a stress test to the Federal Reserve System of the United States and published earlier than this week how the Federal Reserve is bankrupt. That won't be news to many of you who think about the situation. But what I'm saying is this kind of thing is in the headlines. This system is gone. This monetarist globalist system we've had foisted on the world for decades. And so the potential for shift is very great away from doom that would go with letting this collapse go on. And that's where we come in, of course. And we here in the United States have been in a situation where Congress has been in session. Many state legislatures are in session. Some of them are like Texas, only meet every 2 years, but never mind. Most of the 50 state legislatures are in session. And in terms of forcing action in Washington to break with this dead system by reinstating the Glass-Steagall system of bank regulation, where you separated the regular commercial banking from speculative activity that was put in 1933, we have in 10 or 11 of the 50 states memorials from those states to the Congress that they should reinstate Glass-Steagall are already introduced, and Ron's going to begin in a minute and telling us how in South Dakota both of their chambers of the state legislature passed this resolution. We have another 10 states, more or less, out of the 50, who have a lot of action, whose legislatures we've been we have LaRouche Political Action Committee people meeting with potential sponsors for such legislation. We have more congressmen signing on to the Glass-Steagall House of Representatives bill. That's H.R. 129 that Marcy Kaptur from Ohio introduced, along with Walter Jones, the Republican from North Carolina. There are about 28 congressmen now who have signed on to it, and many more who said they will. Recall that the version of it in 2012 had over 80 to 90 signatories. But it's not a question of adding up the math in all of this. They're back to what I said about the physical situation is deteriorating by the minute. The financial and monetary system is self-evidently, even in headlines, a goner. So in that kind of situation, the dynamic is you can have radical shifts. You can have what's called the unexpected, and that's our role to make the positive unexpected happen. Now, I just want to say right at the beginning, and we may repeat it throughout the hour, that we've added to our arsenal of the kind of leadership reference material for policy that you need at this moment of showdown. You have the Glass-Steagall House of Representatives Bill 129, and we certainly need that in the Senate. We can discuss that. It's not been introduced yet, but that's something to be made happen. But once you have a controlled situation where you can have genuinely sound commercial banking, you need to have credit, and we have a new draft in print proposal to reestablish the original Bank of the United States, which was on this principle of the Constitution for the general welfare and to deliberately intervene for the good of the nation. Now, that draft bill is available on the LaRouche Political Action Committee website, and what goes with it is a report written by Michael Kirsch of the LaRouche Political Action Committee team about the, I'm looking for the actual name, what you need to know to return to the original Bank of the United States. And that's available on the LaRouche Political Action Committee website. I'll give you the exact name of a paper that you can read that puts you in the picture. It's called To Restore the Original Bank of the United States, Returning the United States Economy to the Principles of the U.S. Credit System. And then finally, the kinds of projects we need. The priority in North America, the North American Water and Power Lines 21, is in print and circulating. I hope you all know that inside and out. And depending on where you are in the country, you know what needs to go with it to build things up. It's a national and international imperative. It isn't just a local issue, but the Upper Missouri water system, Ron can tell you all about, Upper Mississippi, the Great High Plains, the Great Lakes, former industrial powerhouse of the world that's been turned into a rust belt. We need to, that has to be changed to produce the inputs for NWAPA 21. And you're going to hear from Europe, right from the heart of the Mediterranean, our dear heart in Italy, the kind of economic miracle we can have if we force the shift to the principle behind the Glass-Steagall monetary system, that it's in service of nation states and advancing humanity instead of a bunch of lousy bum bankers. So without, just by saying that, what I want to do is ask Ron to begin with what happened in your state legislature. We need the who, what, where, when, because everyone doesn't know, but then any part of the process leading up to it, and then we'll go back and forth, Ron.
Okay. Well, I think the situation here is, you know, we're running into a food crisis, we're running into a water crisis here. So the need for something like Glass-Steagall is now beginning to dawn on these people. And of course, we've been, the LaRouche organization in South Dakota has been pushing for Glass-Steagall for over a year, and a year ago we had an intervention in all the county commissioners out here where we met with most of the county commissioners in this state. The ones that we didn't meet with, we, you know, made, they got the materials over the email or were mailed to them. But most of them we met with, and we had some fairly good receptions, and a lot of them, this isn't going to happen, we don't need it sort of thing. So starting this spring, when the call started out for Glass-Steagall at the beginning of our new session, which starts in January, we started with a bunch of, calls, letters, and emails, and personal contact. We attended the Cracker Barrels. We kind of picked out the people that we thought we could work with. We contacted a Republican senator in, I think it was about the second week in February, and he said he would carry the resolution for us in the Senate. And a few days later, we found a representative in the House that said he would carry it. So then we spent a day up there, kind of drew a line on the floor up there, getting people on one side or the other. And coming out of that day, we ended up with 28 signatures plus a commitment from some more. All the call-ins and everything had really ignited the people. People were had become aware of what was needed. Then we got the bill introduced on the 13th of, that was on the 13th is when we drew the line up there and got the 28 signatures. Then on the 22nd, we had the bill introduced by the Senate. They got a number that afternoon. Well, that gave us that weekend to organize. That gave us the ability to organize for the people that were voting in the Senate. The Senate was scheduled then to vote on 26th, and I'd done a very excellent job of organizing up to that point. But prior to that, I'd say we probably had, bumped it up to probably 100 people that were now working for getting LaRouche on the books. From that point on, from the win in the Senate of 19 to 16, I think that immediately stirred people to become almost full force for it. We had a local senator here that really come out with I hadn't expected to happen, but he did come out with a bottom of his heart speech. The gentleman that introduced the bill done a very good job of introducing the bill. We had a banker who spoke in opposition from the West River. He'd done a rather sorry job of presenting his case, I thought, and I felt for him. But this local, my local senator here was very inspired by what was happening, and he was one of the last people, by the way, that did sign on, and I did not expect this out of him. But he did jump up. I think he, made a turning point in his decision, and he would very forcefully spoke for it. Well, we ended up with a vote of 19 to 16. Actually, we had lost four of the committed people, and we had gained five of the non-committed. So we come out of there in a pretty good situation. I felt very comfortable on that, but I was hoping we'd get a day or so of reprieve so we could do some more lobbying, some more organizing. So it wasn't assigned till the 28th. So we did get Wednesday to organize.
In the assembly, you mean the other house?
Yeah, and the other it would be now voting in the Senate, and we had passed the. We had passed the Senate, and it had to also pass the House. Mm-hmm. So that there was a day and a half between the votes, so that gave us some more organizing time. In the meantime, I got a hold of a bunch of former state Democratic Party senator or congressional candidates and a couple governor candidates and even a couple Republicans that I think done a very effective job of calling people. And we had picked up, due to the help of a couple of people that were really working hard, Darren Peer, with us, LaRouche people, we picked up, another person that done a good job of leading the House of Representatives rather than the original official. So there, it had generated into fight who could do the better job, basically, up there. So on the 28th, we come out with an unbelievable victory of 68-2. The only irony out of the whole thing was, and of course I had kind of planned for this, because I've really stressed the importance of the former senator from South Dakota who used to be the head of the Senate Banking Commission. That was clear back in 1931 when he became the president of the Banking Commission or the chairman of the Banking Commission. But prior to the 29 blowout, he had already been warning that if they didn't curb speculation, it was going to blow out. Actually, he gave a very good discussion in the Senate. I think it was about 3 months or maybe a little bit longer before it did blow out, saying that if they didn't do something to split the commercial banks and regulate them, there was going to be that blowout. And it did happen on a few months later.
And that's your Senator Peter Norbeck.
Yeah, that was the former Senator Peter Norbeck. And, of course, he had the same position that Senator Johnson now holds the Senate Banking Commission. And he has chosen to take the other side of the situation up till now anyway. He's been supporting the money bags and, I might say, sacrificing the people, which is not a good is not a patriotic senator. And the irony of the whole situation, though, was one of the two people that voted against this was the brother of the former governor here, who is now running for the U.S. Senate. Last August, he created a political action pack called the Peter Norbeck Pack, but his brother voted against Peter Norbeck.
Oh, boy.
So you can see the insanity of what's going on here in South Dakota. I mean, it's breaking down to, there's good people in the Republican Party and there's good people in the Democratic Party. And right now we have to find the real patriots. And I think this was a beautiful example of something good happening here in South Dakota. I was very tickled to be involved in it because I felt, it wasn't so much my leadership that was important. It was the people were beginning to stir. I was seeing the stirring of the people, the power of the people. I mean, our president has failed us, the U.S. Congress has failed us, and it's up to the people now. In a government like ours, which was created on the basis of natural law, and natural rights are nothing, natural rights basically don't come from the Constitution, and they don't come from the president, and they don't come from the Congress. They don't come from anybody. They're given to you by the Creator. And it's the responsibility of the government to protect you and guarantee your rights, And I think individuals are very powerful. I think actually I'm more powerful being a citizen than I am being elected official. I think it's terribly important to understand that you're born with these rights. You don't earn them. You might say natural rights constitutes natural law. And when man is in harmony with natural law, it seems like he develops and he propagates and he's successful. When he parts away from the harmony of the side in the society and away from the principles of natural law, the system will stall. It will tend to turn into an empire and then it will fail. And I think that's what's been happening. I was thinking this morning when the sun come up, how beautiful the sun is, and I was thinking, when it sets, how beautiful it is. Well, when it sets, I think about the people that made it great: Hamilton, Norbeck, Washington, Lincoln, Henry Carey, and Matthew Carey. That's their setting sun. But on the guy that's on the east, looking at the sun east on the other side. It's the new raising, and this morning when the sun was raising in the east, I thought, what we done in Pierce, South Dakota was one of the rays of a changing time, of a new morning, a new dawning, and I hope that and in that new dawning is Peter Norbeck, Lyndon LaRouche. I mean, to me that's the metaphor I have to paint because that's what I feel, and. I think it's absolutely independent that we understand that. We understand the power of the individual. We understand that our nation is bankrupt. We understand that we can turn this thing around. We can understand that this has happened before. it's going to be a terrible situation if we don't do something, but we have the power to do something.
Well, I think that's, and especially, Ron, considering what you said at the beginning, this is occurring in the Dakotas, in South Dakota, which where people have a very real sense of the danger about water, soil moisture, food. And that takes us to Italy, I think. Liliana, if you want to, we're going to come back to the U.S. and to Ron. But
right. You
had a vote here where people's literal existence, what they sense is at stake, is very extreme now, unlike before. And this doesn't mean anything automatically will happen. But could you describe the historic vote this week to begin with?
Yes, it was actually an historic vote because it was, as Paul Krugman called it, and also Le Monde, it was a national election to vote against the parliament and the new government. But it was also, as they commented, a referendum against the horrible austerity that the European Union and the European Central Bank and the IMF are imposing upon Southern Europe, which has already destroyed Greece, Spain and Portugal, where you have a unemployment rate, a youth rate of over 50%, 62% in Greece. Not yet Italy, as LaRouche has commented yesterday. They did not manage to destroy Italy yet, despite 1 year of government of Monti, which was imposed upon us by this Troika 1 year ago in November of 2011. When a normal government elected by the people was replaced by a technocratic government which had the assignment to impose such austerity measures and pay back the banks. And it was interesting because surprisingly Monti, who was running as a candidate, got much less than everybody had expected. He got less than 10% of these elections, even if he was supported enormously from outside of Italy. Merkel endorsed him and demanded that he be voted up again. Napolitano was in Washington to meet Obama just 1 week before the elections and had he was able to endorse Monti, even if he should be, as a state president, he should be above all candidates. And this meeting with Obama was a clear endorsement. And the Italian people voted him out. They didn't want his austerity policy anymore. They didn't want his to get orders from the European Central Bank and the banks anymore. They didn't want a government of banks. And they voted instead for, first of all, two traditional political parties, which are the Democratic Party in Italy, the Partito Democratico, which won the majority at the Chamber of Deputies with Bersani as a candidate for new head of the government, and also the old government of Berlusconi. He was back on stage and he got like the other half of the votes for the political parties came for him. And his party, he didn't make it in terms of majority because thanks to the Italian law, there is a majority bonus which doubles the votes of the winner at the Chamber of Deputies. So Bersani won there and doubled his votes, so he has a majority of over 300 deputies against the 125 of the Partito of Berlusconi. But the biggest surprise of these elections, which I'm sure you will see also in the U.S. press, is the victory of Grillo, who is with the Five Star movement, is a blogger, a former comedian. I would say is a little bit of a mixture between Steve Martin, Adolf Hitler, and Robespierre.
Wow!
Because if one has to make a comparison, because he's a comedian, he used to make people laugh, and then he turned into a politician, and he started to shout. Instead of making jokes, he started to shout, and his motto was, let's bring them all home. Let's get them all out. And so he refuses to support a government with Bersani. He has an agenda which is completely green and ecological. He refuses to accept any infrastructural project. He proposed to abolish the trade union, so it is a very dangerous phenomenon. The reason he was voted up is that he is profiting from the total disappointment of the citizens towards the normal political parties, because they are not doing very much against the crisis. They are not doing anything, actually, against the crisis. And also because he proposes to cut by half their stipends and to cut by half the costs of politics. And just today, I was listening to the news, he got the endorsement of Goldman Sachs, which is interesting.
You mean they actually
gave it? Quite interesting, yes, because it shows he never challenged the euro system. On the contrary, he already won in one region, which is in the city of Parma, and his government there is doing more budget cuts than Monti. So people shouldn't be, Italians are a little bit, they have an illusion that he will do something for their economic reconstruction, while he is absolutely online with Goldman Sachs, and he wants to reduce the world population to 3 billion people. So he's definitely an environmentalist with a little bit of a fascist touch. And this I say because I know that there was a meeting organized by the U.S. ambassador in Rome, Thorne, to support him, which is very, very bad. People should not support this kind of demagogic, populistic tendencies. And we, as Movisol, are intervening in the situation very strongly, as Ron has done in South Dakota, with a Glass-Steagall legislation proposal. Already in the past parliament, we have had three Glass-Steagall proposals inspired by us, as a matter of fact, written by us. The one introduced by the Senator Oscar Peterlini at the Senate. Another one introduced by former Economic Minister Tremonti in the Chamber of Deputies. And the third one introduced by the Lega Nord in also the Chamber of Deputies. And this mentioned explicitly Glass-Steagall of Roosevelt as the basis for a new recovery in Italy. And we also are intervening with a reconstruction program for Southern Europe, which includes, of course, Italy, Greece, Spain, Portugal, and Northern Africa. And these are, in this moment, they are the only concrete proposals on the table to form a government and to form an alliance, because otherwise most of the people all over the world speak of the danger of ingovernability, because Grillo is refusing to support the Bersani government. And if this is the case, Napolitano, the state president, which already gave the mandate to Monti last time, he would be able, before he leaves the Quirinale, the president of the Republic, he would be able to give again a mandate to another technocratic government, for example, of Giuliano Amato, who has been rumored as a possible candidate for a technocratic government, who was the author, one of the protagonists of the so-called Britannia plot in 92, when George Soros destroyed the lira and the sterling pound, and Italy sold off half of its state industry, and is also one of the authors of the Lisbon Treaty. So this shows that even if the whole Italian population gave a very clear no to a technocratic government and to austerity, there are people, including Goldman Sachs, who are pushing for yet another technocratic government. And we as Movisol are mobilizing against this with our proposals. On Tuesday, I have been invited to San Marino, which is a republic of San Marino, one of the ancient Italian republics, which is actually inside Italy, to address a conference on Glass-Steagall together with Harley Schlenger from the LaRouche spokesman in Texas. And we will be showing the the graphs of Dennis Small's presentation on hyperinflation to make clear that, as LaRouche has said very clearly in his last webcast, it's either Glass-Steagall or die. And that's very, very true for Italy. And I will be writing a statement in this direction also, calling all the parties who are now elected in the parliament to mobilize immediately on Glass-Steagall, because that's the only way Italy can survive this attack from speculation, and also help others, because the fact Italy has said a clear no to the dictatorship of the banks and to the austerity imposed upon us by the European Central Bank is a good example for other countries, for Greece, for Spain, for Portugal, where already thousands and millions of people are demonstrating against these austerity measures, and they would be remoralized strongly if Italy would take such an important initiative and say no to the austerity, to pay back, to give bailouts to the banks, and yes to LaRouche and Glass-Steagall.
Wow, that's a clear picture. Thank you, and I'm glad to hear it's all going on. And Ron, we still have you in a good connection, don't we? Can you speak?
Yep.
Oh, okay, good. Go ahead, Ron.
I would like to generate a little thought on Italian history, if I may. I have a little article here I copied. It goes back to the 12th and 13th century, and it's a letter to the ambassador from the Republic of Venice, written by Pope Pius II. And it may take me 4 or 5 minutes to read it, but I would appreciate it if I could read it.
Okay.
Sure.
The Venetian Republic. The Republic is a sluggish thing. It does not know the meaning of shame. It does not blush or grow pale or feel embarrassment. It presents always the same countenance, and that is insolent and shameless. They measure honor by the decree of the Senate, not by right reasoning. What the Senate approves is holy, even though it is opposed to the gospel. Divine law is abrogated by the decree of the Senate. Why? You seek your own gain at another's loss. Your cause is one with thieves and robbers and rests on expediency. On that basis, everything that men do may be approved. What man has his senses does not depend his acts by same sort of expectancy. The slave dealer and the harlot are in pursuit of gain. There is no limit to your adverse or your ambition. It does not matter whether you amass wealth justly or unjustly, provided you amass it. And neither right nor wrong stands in the way of attaining the boundaries of the year, the boundaries of your empire. Honor follows on the train of power. God in heaven you despise. The state is in your God. The state is your God. You worship this and abandon the creator of the universe. This God of yours will perish, I say, will perish. Do not think it is immortal. The Athenians were greater than you. So were the Spartans. So were the Carthaginians. Yet they perished utterly because they were unjust. No power has ever greater than the Roman Empire, and yet God overthrew it all because it was impious. With such a character, you cannot stand. An empire built on evil foundations must crash. Pope Pius II.
Yes, wow. And that's what's happening now.
Yeah, go ahead, Liliana. Certainly, you can speak about Venice.
Yes, it is clearly true what's written there, and as LaRouche has emphasized very often, the Venetian Empire and the Venetian Fondi, which were the first hedge funds before the Renaissance, And it's not a case that the main scandal about derivatives in Italy concerned a bank, which is Monte dei Paschi di Siena, which is the oldest, the most ancient bank in Europe. And it goes back to the 15th century. So this empire, which is the financial empire of the oligarchy, started in Venice and moved to London right after Venice was defeated, as Pius II says. It was not crushed, but it became the British Empire. And what is happening now is the possibility to crush once and for all the British Empire and this financial oligarchy in Europe, which has been preventing our European nations from developing in the last 30 years for sure. And it's not a case that the Financial Times was completely freaked out about the Italian elections, and they themselves are pushing for Grillo because they know that Grillo can guarantee the ingovernability which will allow speculators to attack the country. But they are definitely freaked out because Italians showed to reject this kind of a financial empire, and they are learning to understand. Not everybody understands. People who follow LaRouche and Movisol do understand, not all the public. But, for example, during the campaign, there was a lot of talk about Glass-Steagall on national TV. Tremonti was on national TV with the other candidate of the left, Vendola, who is an ally of Bersani, who won the election. And they were discussing Glass-Steagall. They were explicitly saying that the whole problem with the economy started when Glass-Steagall was repealed in 1999, and so we have to go back to this principle. So this has become an open discussion, and I'm sure the Financial Times, the economists who are pushing for Grillo, they don't like this fact. Yes, Dante is another one who would put these guys, Monti, Draghi, who is the head of the European Central Bank and is Italian himself and also comes from Goldman Sachs, as Monti does. He said, Dante, that the speculator, the usurers, in Canto 11 of his Commedia and also in Canto 17, are killing nature, because the nature of man is to grow with thanks to work. And this was just read 2 days ago on national television by Oscar winner Roberto Benigni, the director and actor in Italy who is the only one who won an Oscar. He's reading Dante in the Piazza Santa Croce in Florence, and he read specifically this canto to indicate the fact that the tradition of Italian Renaissance is to crush speculators. And that's what Dante meant, and many other writers of the Renaissance were explicit on usury and speculation. And Benigni commented this canto saying that Dante would have put Monti in the circle of the usurers, probably covered by some terrible fire or even worse things. And I fully agree. There are people who are very angry in the population against these bankers. And there are two possibilities. Either Italy takes the direction of LaRouche's credit system and Glass-Steagall, or it takes the direction chosen by Grillo, which is very risky. It is like a Jacobin revolution to destroy the political system and not propose anything new. We, as Movisol and LaRouche representatives in Italy, are here to make sure, also on behalf of the Renaissance, that this does not happen, that Italy can contribute, hopefully, to crushing the British Empire once and for all.
Right. Well, that's inspiring to know. We just feel an eternity in the sense of colleagues in arms in the fight. And we let me go back to Ron. One thing about this, in this beautiful sense of speculators and usurers, take away, they kill the future. They kill work towards building a future, building identity. And we've had decades, Ron, you're living in a place where we've lived on developments of the past from the 1930s, 1950s, and 60s in the way of water infrastructure, to get physical about it. And it's so apparent that it's do or die right now. As you said at the beginning, there's some people have a sense of the necessity of Glass-Steagall for this reason. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, right now we're suffering, you know, the beginning of a drought. The drought last year affected us, our hay crop greatly. This morning I had a long conversation with a gentleman trying to trade some hay, tried to find some hay. He said there's no hay left. Our moisture situation is terrible. This time of year, we're usually getting, abundant amounts of moisture. March is usually the month we get the most moisture in. We're not getting any. And I don't know. It looks very serious. The other problem here is with this insanity and this green movement, I mean, because of, today's legal positivism, we've been able to let our government set the price of oil seeds and oil production, and I'm going to appear. I went by one of the oil processing plants. Yeah, the doors are totally locked shut. I mean, they can't make it. But I can look out the window sitting right where I'm at and see the smoke coming out of the stacks of the ethanol plant 6 miles to the east of me. Mm-hmm. Because of monetism or positivism, legal positivism, they've set the value of ethanol higher. So, and they are, and the difference, makes it possible for to think them they're doing the right thing is they can set the price of ethanol, and they can also set the price of their natural gas. So if they lower the price of natural gas, they can burn their natural glass, and produce ethanol. And by their line, on their piece of paper, the dollars justify what they're doing. It's total insanity. They're totally disregarding the laws of natural laws and physical laws and the laws of physics. I mean, people that do that, they can do it for a while. But if you're not in line and with the lawfulness and the orderliness of God's universe, you're going to fail in the end. And failure is getting very close for all these people. I think this is what brought the South Dakotans around to thinking like we're thinking. I mean, 2 years ago, they would have probably stuck their tongue out at me. But I stood by the door when they walked in to go to vote, and I got a lot of smiles. I got a lot of thumbs ups. I got a lot of nods. I got a lot of guys who reached over and shook my hand. It was unbelievable, the response. So I think we're seeing a paradigm shift. I pray to God we are. Because we're on the bottom of the barrel. I also run into, later on in the afternoon, I run into an 83-year-old man that used to work on the Blunt Canal and sat down and talked to him. He couldn't understand why I got so excited when he said he used to work on the Blunt Canal. Well, the Blunt Canal was part of the water project of the Missouri River Basin that shouldn't have been finished.
Uh-huh.
But when Nixon took us off the gold standard or done away with Bretton Woods, shortly after that, they shut down the Blunt Canal. They shut down most of the major projects around the world.
Did that come from behind the Owyhee Dam, or how was that to go? I'm just for picture it for people.
Well, the pumps were set up just above the Owyhee Dam to take the water to the east.
All right.
But they had to lift the water 400 feet, out of the river,
mm-hmm.
from the top of the river to the top of the bluff, and then get it to run south and then east.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were going to fill a reservoir, some reservoirs there to the east of Pier. Well, they worked on it for, I don't know, about 6 months. There's quite a bit of the ditch was built. And he promised next time I come up there, he would take the time and go and show me around and show me what was built and what wasn't built. Because I'd like to see where the reservoirs were supposed to be and stuff like that. It'll probably take us all day or more. But, I mean, that's a project that should have been finished.
Mm-hmm.
And here they're giving the land back to the people, I mean, it's totally asinine. It's killing the future. And to think about it, if we had finished a water project, those guys back in 50 and 60 that could see the future, and see that it was essential to build this project, they knew that we were going to need it someday. And we definitely need it today. I mean, you've got L.A., you've got Las Vegas, you've got Phoenix, Arizona, you've got all those cities in the Southwest running out of water, you've shut down 40% of the agriculture. I mean, that's what loads up the country out here. We're plowing from the middle of the road to the middle of the road, basically. We're pushing out trees, we're pushing down farms. We're destroying the country. And then the governor up there is arguing about bringing more milk cows in. Well, we can't even take care of what we got. And furthermore, they had a dairy buyout 20 years ago that took all the beautiful farms down and took all the beautiful dairy cows away. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to try to redo this insanity. They know they've done the wrong thing, but they still don't have the physical production there to maintain what they want to do. So they can't do it. So I don't know what it's just impossible to figure out what has happened. If they had finished this NWAP, of course, everything would be in place and everything would be like heaven on earth, basically. We'd have the energy, we'd have the water, we'd have the roads, we'd have the towns, and we'd have the people. I just looked at a report this morning from the state government here. We've got 34 less jobs of the first of the year than we did in 2008.
How many less jobs, Ron?
3,400.
Uh-huh.
That's not many, but we're certainly not going anywhere.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And then you look at where the money is coming from. About $20 million comes from taxes on credit card banks, but we're taking $97 million away from the poor people who are playing the video lottery machines.
Mm-hmm.
It's total insanity. They're accomplished nothing. The Congress up there had 495 bills. It's lucky they got 2 hours. I mean, we had to fight to get them to get hours. But they'll never go through all those bills. They don't need 495 bills up there. They need about a half a dozen decent bills that put some sense into stuff based on reason and truth and justice, and we'd accomplish something.
Yes, you're describing chaos, all right, and the last pretense is gone that it continues to work to put any gas in the car, food on the table, because it's the hyperinflation factor right now is is the fuse is lit. It's ready to go. Let me ask you one thing. Do you want to say more, Liliana, about the economic, the Mediterranean basin, the southern Europe, the whole economic development? You have the same situation of what wasn't done, what was canceled, nuclear power development canceled. But on the other hand, what people need to know about what Glass-Steagall forms the gateway to do.
Right. Yes, the situation is very similar to what Don described for South Dakota. For example, in Sicily, we have lack of water every summer, and it becomes problematic when there is a drought or a very hot period, which in Italy is, of course, particularly in southern Italy, is very often the case in the months between June and September. And so it's not only a problem which Africa has, but we have the same problem also in southern Italy. And it shouldn't be, because the plans are there, are existing. And there are actually some of these plans for water management are existing even in the European Union. They have numbers for the European Union, which we have published in our plan, in our reconstruction plan for Southern Europe. And Italy has been the main promoter of one very important project in Congo, which is Transacqua, the Transacqua project, which would take the water from Lake Chad and bring it and use it for development and agriculture. So the projects are existing. They are not being financed and promoted because all the money has been going, which has been taken away from taxpayers in Italy, has not gone to any of these projects in the last 2-3 years, but has gone to pay back the banks, and particularly Italy's Participation in the bailout fund of the European Central Bank. Somebody has noted that even if 60% of the money of these banks is actually going to French and German banks like Deutsche Bank, who is involved also in the Monte dei Paschi di Siena scandal and has been sued by Monte dei Paschi di Siena, Italy has nevertheless contributed to this fund for 18%, even if most of this, if people wonder why they keep giving aid, so-called aid, support funds to Greece, and the Greek have to get food from the garbage can, and children in Greece are taken away from their parents because the parents cannot feed them, and they faint in schools because they don't have food when they go to school. People may wonder why is this the case, even if there are constant funds being given to Greece. It's because these funds are going for sure not to the economy, for sure not to the citizens or to school or to hospitals, but they are going to pay back derivative speculations on state bonds done mostly by French and German banks. And this is the case for Italy, too. We have an economy which is used to function very well. It used to be the sixth industrial power in the world. We have in northern Italy, in particular, a very good Mittelstand, which is a medium, small and medium-sized enterprise. But many of these entrepreneurs are going to Switzerland. They are moving their companies, their industries to Switzerland because they don't get funds from the banks. When the 90 days of the credit from the banks for their industrial activity are over, they don't wait one day longer. They demand the money back. It used to be that the particularly the local banks would support these companies and would arrange a system so that the company can continue working. Now, because of this speculative bubble and hyperinflation, these companies do not last. And many of these projects which would revive our small and medium-sized enterprises in Italy are absolutely not taken into consideration. To this, one must also add that there is, for example, in the case of Grillo, he's opposed to any of such infrastructural projects, and his members, which are mostly young people, protesters, are actively opposing, for example, the TAV project, the high-speed train which would go from Turin to France. They are opposing it even with violence, with demonstrations which have been where the police had to intervene many times, and they are opposing any of such projects, which shows again that they are on the side of Goldman Sachs, because the people who don't want these infrastructural projects to start are for sure the merchant bankers who are profiting. They are profiting from this ingovernability, and they are profiting from the lack of economic development.
Yeah, that's
legal positivism is the opposition to the principles of the Founding Fathers' concept of natural law. I mean, people that can't conceive natural law are mentally deficient. They have a lack of education. Nobody can dictate that there will be honesty, honorable people. Today we have a world of psychopaths that can't feel empathy for other people. We need to receive the concept of classical, revive the concept of classical education. Only a system developing man's character, educating the passions and subconscious to the harmony with natural law will produce a mind soul that will automatically do the right thing. Basic truth, known to our ancestors and founding fathers, but rejected as stifling, prove themselves to be what they are. Obeying them honors not only human reason and the Declaration of Independence, but also the Creator. Dedicating oneself to a great cause, taking responsibility, and gaining self-knowledge is the essence of being human. A predatory free trade capitalist's truest enemy and humanity's greatest ally is the self-educated individual who has read, understood, delays their gratification, and walks around with their eyes wide open. The very best example of the expression of the American Constitution were the National Banking Act of 1791 to 1811 and the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933 to 1999. Glass-Steagall made everything possible, from TVA to landing on the moon. If we are to revive a nation, we must bring Glass-Steagall back as the first element. And that's what I saw in Pierre the other day, was the first rays of the new rising sun.
Right. And let me just point this up. It's funny. One reflection of the new rising sun came from a crazed mind, what's now known as Bernie II. You've heard of Bernie Madoff, the guy who did the Ponzi scheme, who's sitting in jail.
Yep.
Well,
right.
Bernanke is Bernie number two, according to certain writers. And Bernie number two, at one of the two hearings he gave in Washington this week, our people were there on the scene. One was the House, one was the Senate. And in the Senate side, even though you had the cowardly elements sitting there, who even some who said they were for Glass-Steagall but then left it at the door, it was Bernie number two who said, and of course, we don't want to do anything radical or weird like Glass-Steagall. He said it. Now, I'm only saying because the invisible but powerful rays of this sun process you're talking about, Ron,
okay,
are definitely being felt all over. And it doesn't mean that we relax. It calls us to yet more action.
Right.
I think that that's what we wanted to. It's just like
that's why I said it was just a ray of the sun. I mean, that, when we got it working, it'll be the whole sun will be there.
Okay.
Even George Washington said they worked more, and he's talking about the speculators here. They worked more effectively against us than the enemies of the armies. They are 100 times more dangerous to the liberties and the great cause we are engaged in.
Right, and so I want to remind people in the final minutes. I mean, Congress is back on Monday. You know, they try hard not to be there in Washington. We know we've had this insane sequestration announced. State legislatures are in session, and I know Ron is the first one to help crossfire in other places if we want to. I'm sure you're available, Ron, by telephone.
I will make myself available because it's damn important, period.
And we have people at different conventions of national organizations, some of them like the AFL-CIO Labor or like the National Farmers Union, who are on record officially nationally as for Glass-Steagall, but then not the hands and the feet aren't doing the work. But that can change. It can change in an instant, as Ron has described. And as Liliana, you're talking about, we have a window of opportunity, right, in Italy and Europe, as shown by the vote against austerity. But do you want to say anything in your final words, Liliana, first, and then Ron?
Yes, when the new parliament convenes on March 15th, we will be there with our draft legislation, similar to Hirsch's, Mike Hirsch, and with the Glass-Steagall law, mm-hmm, and we'll make sure that it's adopted as soon as possible, officially.
And Ron, you have a final minute. We'll give you the last word.
We don't go nowhere without LaRouche material here. LaRouche pack material is essential to organizing. Right now, we have put letters of support together to be signed by bank presidents, Indian leaders, labor unions, farm leaders. Hopefully, some of us will be in Washington and meeting with some of these state legislators, and we want to have all the backup material that we can that proves that we need, or that Glass-Steagall is needed by the people of South Dakota, the United States, and the world. Because New Bretton Woods was nothing but an extension of Glass-Steagall, an international extension of Glass-Steagall, that gave us the ability to rebuild the world after the devastation of World War II.
And that's what we're looking forward to, rebuilding the future. And I'll mention one specific thing in closing. Naturally, in Congress, as I said, this weekend, Sunday, Monday, order your congressperson or the or anyone else in your state who hasn't done so to back Glass-Steagall and introduce it in the Senate. But secondly, and come to Washington at any time. We had Pennsylvania delegation here. We had Maryland. We had others this week in Washington. But March 23rd weekend at the end of the month is a policy conference here in the Washington, D.C. area to which you're invited. You can email me at this LaRouchePub.com on the radio show, or you can get in touch with people associated with the Schiller Institute, the LaRouche Political Action Committee. But it's on the theme that Ron has struck and Liliana, too. Ron said there's a paradigm shift underway. We're going to make sure that happens, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, South Dakota, Italy, and best wishes to Ron and Liliana. Thank you. This closes out the March 2nd, 2013 show.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye.